Hey, toy family! Welcome to another great edition of the Marsham Toy Hour, where we discuss anything and everything designer toys. I'm Gary Hamm.
And I'm George Gaspar.
And Carlos is out sick this week. But George, this is our 50th episode. Can you believe that?
Congratulations. 50. I mean, we shouldn't really celebrate till we get to 52, though. That's a full year.
52 is a full year, but 50 is still a pretty big milestone.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Well, thanks. Well, congratulations to you, too. You jumped
on
late.
You're the only one that's been there for all of them.
That's true. But boy, did Carlos pick a bad time to get sick, because in celebration of our 50th episode, I'm taking us on a trip to Singapore.
Amazing.
I know. So let's go. So there is a gallery in Singapore called Cult Gallery, and they currently have an exhibition going on from February 17th until March 18th entitled Choking Hazard, an Exhibition of Toys. This show brought together a great international set of 30 artists and designers that were invited to dismantle existing toys sourced from toy markets and remix them into new objects, inspired by the waste of mass production and overconsumption. Cult's curators say that toys are a craft that celebrate workmanship, inspires play, and creates a mark in pop culture. So the curators of Choking Hazard reached out to us to moderate a discussion on toys in conjunction with the exhibition. So I thought that was pretty cool that they reached out to us, and of course I said yes. So joining us are four of Singapore's top producers and makers and shakers in the world of toys. They are Jackson Awe, the founder of creative design studio Mighty Jacks. Mighty Jacks has produced art figures in collaboration with artists and brands worldwide. In just a span of 3 years, Mighty Jacks has produced over 100 unique toy objects and shipped to over 50 countries.
Next up, we have Daniel Yu, who is a sculptor working primarily in the medium of clay and resin. Daniel's fictitious characters see a cult following amongst the urban and subculture art scenes in both Singapore and abroad.
And then we have Rizal, spelt R-Z-L. Rizal's alternative pop culture influences are anything but mainstream. His DIY work ethics mean he's been in several noise rock bands, directed a B-grade sci-fi film featuring underground musicians, and now he's creating his own quirky, kaiju-ish vinyl toys under the name Fragile Darkness, and you can find him on Instagram under at Fragile Darkness.
And we also have the curator of Choking Hazard, Tulika Ahuja.
Well, welcome everybody. Thanks for joining us and having us.
Thanks for having us.
Hi.
Actually, why doesn't everybody say hello and say their name just so we can kind of, as a listener, get to know who's who?
There you go.
Hi, this is Jackson.
Hey, Jackson.
I'm Daniel.
Hey, Daniel.
I am Rizal.
Nice to meet you, Rizal.
Hi, Tulika.
And hello, Tulika. And you're the curator of the event.
Yeah.
and you'll be the one that's easily distinguishable.
Yeah, I'm not surprised there.
There you go. Well, thanks so much for inviting us. I mean, I think this is really cool. And I've seen photos of the Choking Hazard event, and I think everything looks incredible. Very well put together, and it's very impressive. And I also think it's going to be really cool just getting to know some of you. Like, I think for us, myself, and the listeners as well, a lot of us aren't exactly all that familiar with the toy culture in Singapore, you know, the producers and the makers and everything. So I think it's going to be really interesting talking to you four and just getting to know more about toys and what's going on in Singapore. So I guess we'll just kind of just kind of round table it. We'll just start out with some questions, and just whoever feels like they have a good response to the question, just have at it. So why don't we start first with, so the toy culture has always been very strong in a few Asian countries like Japan and China and even Thailand. So how does Singapore's toy culture compare or relate to the other Asian countries?
How does it compare to the rest of the Asian markets? Well, I would say Singapore is still quite a small market. It's quite a small industry. There aren't many toy artists locally, like myself. But in the industry itself, I mean, there are lots of other groups that make up the toy community here in Singapore, you know, like collectors, toy production houses, retailers. So we're quite a tight-knit group. I think a few of us still hang out quite frequently as friends, you know, just for over dinner and just to chat. So compared to the regional market, it's still a pretty small community here in Singapore.
Okay. And who was that talking?
Oh, that was Daniel.
Oh, hey, Daniel.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to know who's who at first, so.
Yeah. So does anyone else want to further elaborate on how they might see maybe like past and present or, you know, toy culture in Singapore is to explain to our listeners?
Rizal, yeah. I think there's a lot of new up and coming toy makers. Collectors has always been around. You know, even for me, I've always been collecting toys since I was a kid. And I think it's only recently, through social media that we get to expand and make more friends and make more contacts. And that's how we, kind of like start developing our own toys and toy lines. Yeah, and I guess it's a pretty young industry down here. But there are some new guys who are starting out and coming up with their own stuff, you know, trying to hook up with other manufacturers and, you know, just looking for your own places to produce toys.
Very good. No, I mean, that's impressive. Like, there's actually a lot of production coming out of Singapore, and you guys are saying it's just kind of a fairly new industry there. And like we mentioned in the intro that Mighty Jacks in just a 3-year time span has produced over 100 figurines, and that's just a huge number in a very short period of time. And that in and of itself is a big accomplishment. So congrats on that. And so that makes me think of, like, with the growing toy culture in Singapore, how do you, as producers and designers, see the toys themselves? Are they merely design objects to you, or do you view them more as a platform to put forth, say, a conversation of something bigger, like making a statement against mass consumption or gender or war or, you know, some other, you know, topic like that?
Jackson here. And I think it's definitely a platform for them to tell their own stories, you know. Because at this point, I really believe in the power of content that an individual can create. For example, Daniel and Rizal's universe are really different, and it has their own voice in it, and the art visually it shows as such too. So it is this content that will continue on to be, develop the new pop culture, develop the new, you know, culture that people like.
So to add on to that, Daniel here, I think toys are, at the end of the day, they can be a platform, you know, just like any other medium, like painting, sculpture, or illustration. It's just a kind of platform for an artist to convey a certain message. For my work, I mean, if you strip it down, I'm basically, I just try to make cool shit. I mean, I'm influenced by things like, you know, popular culture, folk tales and cultural traditions, and I try to add that into my work wherever possible. But as artists, I think we're just trying to make stuff that is validated by other people.
Yeah, no, I like that. I mean, I agree with that. I remember going to art school, and I was just drawing what I thought was something cool, just a fun, cool idea. But my art teacher was kind of hoity-toity and would always kind of overanalyze the meaning behind every drawing that I did. And I kind of see how that can relate to toys, too. I think a lot of artists and designers and producers and whatnot, they just want to make something cool that looks really nice sitting on your shelf, and yet someone out there is going to interpret that, and what's the real meaning behind that toy. And in some cases that's true, and in other cases someone just wanted to do a cool character design.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they're just toys, you know. I mean, they're like childlike playthings, and people shouldn't take them so seriously.
But there definitely are some toys that out there that are definitely designed to send a message. Do you like those kind of the toys that have a more of a story behind them, or do you just prefer them just to be an object to look cool on your shelf?
Result, yeah. I think personally for me, I find that kids today don't really play with their toys. They'd rather go for, you know, your iPads and your computers and your video games.
Mm-hmm.
When I was young, I mean, we didn't have any of this, and I played with my toys. I enjoyed my toys. I mean, I had like a Luke Skywalker figure that I went to the shower with. I went to the beach with.
Didn't we all?
And I think it's fun. It kind of you know, flexes your imagination, and as an adult, I think I still make use of that imagination to you know, in my daily life and even in my work. And I mean, for me personally, the toys I make are something that can be a collectible item, but it can also be something that you can play around with.
Yep, very cool, Rizal Skywalker.
So now that you guys are all producing toys, have you found your collecting of toys stopping because you're using all of your funds to just make stuff?
I think we all face that, right?
Yes, but I was just talking to Rizal about it, and yeah, at the end of the day, I think a lot of us that are in the toy industry started out in some way or another collecting toys. So that kind of toy collecting has never really stopped, at least for me personally. I can't think of about a point in my life where I wasn't collecting toys. So even though now I'm actually making my own toys, I still try to keep up to date about what's happening in the toy industry.
Jackson, I think we definitely still collect toys, but we become a little bit more selective on what to collect, especially if it's things that, when we see it from a producer point of view, that we don't understand how it could happen, or it's just amazing in that it's complex and stuff. And that's where, you know, our interests are getting a little bit deeper. But I suppose, you know, nowadays when we look at more simpler toys, I'm just thinking about how it was made, and it's hard to switch that off.
Yeah, I think to add to Jackson's point, being a toy producer, like a toy maker, kind of informs you better when it comes to toy collecting. You begin to appreciate things that you won't normally look at if you're just a collector.
Right. Now, Jackson, as a producer of toys, like, you produce a lot of stuff in a very short period of time. Do you feel obligated to keep designs and work in Singapore, or do you just like prefer working with artists in other countries?
Wow.
Keep in mind there are two artists.
First of all, I love local artists. But the truth is, you know, when we compare ratio to ratio, there isn't that much designers and artists there are here, as in, you know, in US, where the, you know, the scene became really big and there's just a lot more people doing such designs. So therefore, the people that we work with has always been a bigger ratio going to, you know, US artists instead of local guys. But we still have one or two local guys working with us. Yeah.
So with the scene being a little bit smaller, a little more new in Singapore, do you feel pressure to support it more out there than, say, the rest of the world?
I mean, for me itself, yes, definitely it always crossed my mind when a new artist or someone from an art school locally, you know, submit their work, they're asking us to produce it for them. And we always try to find angle to put them in, you know, the best way to present them. Maybe something like a talk show and other events. But at the end of the day, I'm coming from a more business side of it, and I have to consider whether we are able to sell out to a certain quantity and stuff, and that makes sense for everyone. I mean, we don't have to make money, but we can't lose it. So
yeah, sure. I mean, you're a business at the end of the day. You have to assure that, you know, bills are paid and, you know, production costs are paid and whatnot. It's not easy running a toy business, as you know. So with Mighty Jacks is known for some of the most prolific collaborations with very global brands. And you're even gone into licensing with, you know, Looney Tunes and DC and whatnot. And you're working with Jason Freeney and Huck G. And so could you tell us about the process of embarking on a collaboration of such scale with, say, a license? Have you found it difficult to work with a license versus an individual artist?
Yes. Yes. It's it's a very steep learning curve. We have always worked with artists, and it has been rather easy because they always wanted to get their art piece produced, right? And as do we want to have unique content. So that part was a mutual understanding, and things are rather smooth with artists. But with licenses, it's our early last year we started working with licenses, and it's a different ball game. You know, we're touching a bit on commercial type of toys, and the whole process revolves around negotiating. You know, trying to cut one another, trying to get the best deal out of one another until they're actually on your side. So there's a lot of statistics to do with quantity that you can sell through, markets that you want to be in. And each market, they're going to charge you a premium for it, especially US, since, you know, most pop culture content are really huge in US compared to Southeast Asia and other continents. So what I feel is that it's a trial and error, you know. We're just trying to bargain, to come out with like a number that we could put to this project, and end of the day, they just want to be paid, and we get to use their tags, logos, characters. But what I realized through this part is the importance of a really good distributor in terms of business side, which could really help you in expanding your licenses. Yeah.
Well, good. I got to commend you, because for only being around for like, what, 3 years now, like Mighty Jacks feels like one of the more prominent producing companies and designer toys today. It feels like every week or several times a month there's some sort of announcement, you know, going towards a pre-order for a vinyl toy or resin multiple or something. You got a lot of things in the works, and you're always staying in the public eye, and I commend you for that.
Yeah, we try to create a habit for our collectors, where every weekend we'll have this Mighty Weekends, we'll introduce something new. I know we're touching a bit on licenses, and for us to do what we do, we have to touch on licenses at some point, and this is it. But we are also focusing a lot more on other original creations. We are still tapping back on where we came from. So every month you still see a new artist release, and next weekend we have James Jean coming out, which is very big. It's a dream for me to work with him.
Oh, wow, great.
We're still trying to have that, cultivate that this culture of original artists. It's, you know, licenses, it comes, it's just like a gateway drug for, you know, the general consumers that never saw a designer toy.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, you're right in the sense that, say, like 10 years ago, designer toys felt very like everyone just kind of wanted to work original and just do original stuff and didn't want to do licensing. But, you know, today it almost feels like a necessity to work in licensing. You just really need to have that to be a sustainable company. But I have to hand it for you for, you know, the licensing that you've done, like say like the Snow White, the Bad Apple one that you did several years ago, or even the X-Ray that you're doing with DC and the, you know, Looney Tunes and Warner Brothers, those are still very much connected and interpreted through the eyes of an artist, and those artists are getting credit for that work. So you're doing licensing, but you're also still keeping it branded with an artist, so you can look at that and you can see that it's going or Jason Freeney's work, and I think that's cool.
You know what, while we have Jackson here, this is a question I think we've had in the past on the show while we've been talking. Your collaborations with like Looney Tunes and DC and Jason Freeney, does Jason still do the sculpting on? Because I know originally he was doing sculpting for, you know, the pieces he would put out himself. Does he still have to do all the sculpting at the speed at which you're releasing figures?
Well, his role is more of a creative director for the line now, for X-Ray, because Most of the characters that we have coming in, they have a certain style guide that comes with them, and the models are pretty much, you know, we can't touch much of the original character, so they remain as is. But where it comes in is the dissection part, definitely, which is the whole concept of X-Ray, and that's where it comes in, and you know, he does sketches and stuff and show us where it's all going. But because the processes and the flow that we have right now is more digital, therefore, we will always have new renders for him to assist us on, whether it's a particular dissection that he wants it or not. It gets a little bit trickier when we touch on the, what do you call it, the non-humanoid characters, the cartoon characters where the structure just doesn't make any sense. That's where he truly, you know, help us give an idea of how it's going to look like. But he still continued to do his original sculpts. However, those are not licensed, and we are still continuing to develop them and produce them as the Mighty Jack's original figures as done by artists.
That's cool, because I was picturing him have to sculpt day after day to get the level, to get the speed at which you're releasing these.
I know.
He's really fast, but...
So here's a question. It could be for Jackson or really anybody on the panel, but since you've started Designer Toys versus today, what's been the most notable change today that you've noticed in Designer Toys when you first started?
Maybe we can start with Resolve. I suppose he's pretty new into the scene.
Let's go, Rizal.
So what was your question again? I was just doing...
See, so this is tricky because you got thrown into the spot. The question was, so what's been the most notable change today versus when you first started? But I think, you know, Rizal, I think you've been thrown into the fire a little bit by your comrades, being that you're probably the newest person to Designer Toys. I think they're trying to get one over on you.
okay, maybe I'll answer the question first. I'll have some time to think about that.
Yeah, think about that one.
I think for me, the most prevalent change would probably be social media. You know, how globally we're a lot more connected nowadays. Because if I were to have been doing this, say, like 10 years ago, I would not have been able to survive as an independent artist. But nowadays with social media, you know, you're connected with people from all around the world, you know, not just collectors, but fellow artists like George, for instance. I mean, I got to know him a few years back through the OMFG series. And I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago, I actually got to meet him in person in DesignerCon. So, I mean, a lot has changed thanks to things like the internet. You know, you're so much more connected to the world, and you don't necessarily have to rely on your local industry for you to make a livelihood. So yeah, I think that would be the biggest change for me.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, Daniel. I mean, I look back at it, you can look back at social media from it kind of starting a little bit with Facebook, and then it got into you know, blog spots, and then Twitter, and then gosh, the biggest one is by far, you know, Instagram. You know, we pretty much all use Instagram as our main website anymore. It's just so easy to upload to. And then, but you know, when I first started, it was primarily going to all the great blogs out there, and then the publications like Clutter and Giant Robot, High Fructose. You know, early on, it was a lot more difficult to get information, but now you can get the more personal touch by following your favorite artists and companies just through their social media feeds. But another thing I want to get your point on view on is, how has international shipping affected you guys? I don't know about how Singapore is, but here in the United States, international shipping from, say, 10 years ago has more than doubled in price. So, you know, shipping internationally has gotten very expensive, and I was wondering what your thoughts were on how that affects the smaller company and independent producers.
Yes, but I think that's also the kind of, it's like the price that you have to pay for being in the global market. I mean, like, the other alternative would be for us Singaporean artists would be to be confined to the Singapore market, which, as we mentioned just now, it's growing, but it isn't a huge market. So there are pros and cons to opening ourselves up to the international market, I suppose. And shipping is just one of those factors.
No, but I mean, add on, like, talking about the Singapore market, we only got 8 or 9 artists for this show who are from Singapore, because Singapore doesn't have that many toy producers and designers. And the rest of them, like 20 plus, were all international artists, and they didn't complain about shipping because it was expensive to like meet the deadline of the show and to send it over. So I think, yeah, they understand like pros and cons.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's just a shame that the shipping rates have become what they have. I think it really does kind of hinder a lot more purchases. But I think most of the collectors and even companies understand, yeah, you know, that's just the state of where things are today. And if you want something, that's just what you got to do. If, like in your case, Talika, if someone wants to participate in an international show, I mean, shipping fees is just something that comes along, you know, with agreeing to do the show.
Yeah.
Talika, as a curator, what do you think the role of galleries in terms of distinguishing what is art and what is a toy? Do you find any defining moment as to what is art and what is a toy?
Well, yes. When we were doing research for the show, there were moments where we were like, okay, this is a toy and this is a designer toy. There is a big distinction, and we had to be conscious of it when we were reaching out to artists for the show. But I guess the gallery does play an important role because it adds a different dimension as compared to toy conventions. And it also reaches out to a different target audience, like maybe people who are not toy collectors, and a gallery might play a role of introducing them to toys as art toys. Like that was the case for me, because I wasn't that much into toys before doing research for the show. But after doing research, there is a clear distinction, and we help to tell people the same thing in a way.
Yeah, so do you find yourself having to describe it when someone comes in off the street into the gallery and this is a completely new world to them? Like, how do you describe the show to them?
It's just a world of toys. It's a strange world of toys.
The dark-seated world of toys, right?
Yeah, something like that.
What was your inspiration behind Choking Hazard? What made you want to do this and put it together?
I think we want it to be different from a standard toy convention. And we also wanted to offer commentary on all the little evils of the mass market toy industry. And we thought the best way to do that was to tap into the designer toy industry. So that was basically the inspiration behind it. And it kind of manifested by getting artists to use mass market toys and then turn them into pieces of art.
I like it. What all the artists came up with was great. I like seeing all the photos and everything.
Yeah, and then when we were doing research for it, we realized that a lot of artists, like existing bigger toy artists, like Sket One, for example, they already have this running commentary. Like he uses a lot of sriracha bottles and soy sauce bottles,
yep,
to create Dunnies. So it already exists, and it was just about bringing it to Singapore.
Yeah, I kind of like the same thing with Sucklord too, right? Like he sent kind of like, wasn't it exist? Did he do something original for the show, or did he just send over something that pre-existed?
He sent over his Gaylord.
Yes.
Toy, okay. His 10th anniversary, the pink one. And he sent over his Chunghwa Raisin toy, which was bought even before it was open for exhibition because our creative director saw the piece and he was like, I'm buying that. I'm going to frame it for the show and then we can display it up. It's like, okay.
That's cool. I gotta say, I like that the fact that you guys allowed some pre-existing stuff, you know, to be in the show, because a lot of times galleries expect to be have all new works, all new original creations, but when you're going international and whatnot, sometimes it's not always bad to showcase something that's already pre-existed, because a lot of people don't always get to see that work, and you're introducing it to new, fresh eyes. So to them, it's a completely new piece, even though it existed several years ago. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
Rizal, we have a question for you.
Sure.
We're going to throw you a curveball. We're not going to ask you that same question again. So since you're fairly new, like how welcoming has the world of toys been to you? Like as an artist that until recently has not used toys as his main medium, could you tell us about like what the entry point into the scene has been like for you?
I think it was very welcoming. I think the toy community, the people in the toy community are very friendly, whether they're collectors or they're, you know, designers themselves. I've not had a bad experience so far. And, you know, it's been pretty smooth for me. I'm just waiting for something to kind of like hit me when I least expect it now.
Sure.
So I was also pretty lucky because, with social media and internet, it makes for easy conversations and communications as well. So I've managed to collaborate. We're working some collaborations with people from overseas, all the way from Norway to UK to Canada. So it's really far out places that I don't think I would have thought of working with people there. Yeah, I mean, it's very exciting, very interesting for me right now because you know, it's a fairly new market being a toy producer. As a toy collector, I've always I kind of know certain people who collect certain toys, and I know who to approach if, you know, I have questions on it. But as a producer, sometimes the collectors themselves might not be might not have insight into how toys are made. So it's a whole different way of finding out things that are not normally out there. So a lot of research, a lot of you know, cold calls, a lot of cold emails, and it's been really great so far. And I find the toy community has really been very encouraging. I mean, whether, you know, in terms of poisoning each other to buy the latest releases, or even just to support you know, shows like this and all that.
That's great. That's great to hear. And so I was looking at your Instagram account and what you did for the show, the Fame Guns. Those are made out of vinyl, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, usually when someone starts breaking into, like, you know, the toy scene, usually they start out with something like a resin or something. But for you just to start right out of the gate doing vinyl, and I've actually heard that vinyl is, like, notoriously hard to get in Singapore. Like, could you tell us about the process of using vinyl, like, as an early artist toy maker in the scene?
Okay. I think for me it was a very calculated move. I kind of thought about doing resin and all that, but for something of the size of my figure, I didn't think resin would be suitable. It has to do with the medium as well. Vinyl is something that is definitely hard. I mean, I don't think we have any factories doing vinyl over here, and I would have to go through other means to do it. So when I was looking up for contacts for vinyl making and all that, again, I had to reach out to social media to get contacts overseas. And I even went down the Japan route, but that was going to take me like a few years to produce.
Sure.
So I went alternate means as well. Yeah.
So did you rotocast those yourself, or did you have someone else do it for you?
I got someone to do it for me. So basically, I came out with a design. I came out with a prototype mold for it, and then kind of like ship it overseas, and the person over there kind of took care of all the production process.
Okay, so you did all the sculpting and you made the molds, and then you just sent them off to someone else to do the casting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Simply because I couldn't get anybody to produce it here.
That's interesting. I didn't know that there wasn't any factories working in vinyl out there.
I guess, I mean, if you're talking about commercial vinyl, like making bottles and all that, there would be, but they probably would not be interested in looking at a small quantity of production run.
I mean, okay. That's pretty much the same problem we face here.
Yeah.
It's just too toxic. No one wants to deal with it.
Yeah.
So, Daniel, we haven't talked to you too much. How about a question for you? So you're your Chinese zombie figure, Jiangxi? Am I saying it correctly?
It's the Chinese word for hopping vampire, so it's pronounced Jiangxi, but yeah.
it's better when you say it than I try to say it. But those figures have amassed quite an international following. Like, how do you think something so quintessentially Asian is able to gain traction, like, say, somewhere here in the States?
I don't know, you know. I mean, the reason why I created that character was I wanted to kind of incorporate some form of cultural reference that myself as a Chinese I could relate to. And maybe it's cliche, but the first thing that I thought of was the Chinese vampire zombies, maybe from the old school Hong Kong movies in the 80s.
Yep.
So I think it kind of resonates also with Western crowd as well. You know, it's a creepy monster, and yeah, it kind of evokes the kind of old school feel to it, I suppose.
Your sculpting style is very it's different than a lot of the regular designer vinyl stuff. You have a very super detailed sculpting and super detailed work. Is that something that you consciously decided upon when you were starting, that you wanted to do more of a sculptural piece than the flat, like more like flat planes with a more painted option?
I don't think it was a conscious effort, but as a collector, when I was first starting out, you know, I was always drawn to toys that had excessive detail. You know, companies like McFarlane, for its time, they were doing things that no other toy company was doing, and I really liked the style that evolved. And I also drew a lot of inspiration from wargaming miniatures, like Warhammer and stuff like that. I really appreciated the amount of detail that was put into such a small piece. And so I guess subconsciously, when I was starting out, you know, that was just the kind of look that I wanted to emulate, because these were people that I looked up to.
Cool.
Earlier, you kind of alluded to that you had previously worked with our George Gaspar on the first series of the OMFG series. Tell me, how was it working with George?
Oh, come on. I'm here. He can't say, well, you could say bad things. That's fine.
It's just you and me talking. George isn't here. He's...
No, I mean, it was great. I mean, because I think how the OMFG series came about was, at that time, I was still doing quite a bit of custom figures. And I would post my finished works on October Toys, the forum.
Yeah.
And that's how I got to know about the whole OMFG initiative. And I decided to, you know, try it out, you know, because how it worked was that the first series, I think anyone on the forum could submit their works, and be it sculptural or even if it was a drawing that we find, because I think George would eventually sculpt it. So I decided to sort of try my luck and enter the series. And I was fortunate enough to be part of the inaugural OMFG series.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, George was great. I mean, at that point of time, I hadn't been working on resin casting. So what I did was I sent over my original sculpt, and I think George got it done in resin and he tweaked it so that it would be producible in PVC. So yeah, no complaints here.
All right. You're being way too complimentary of George. All right.
Hey, I'm nice sometimes.
So, Dan, your sculpting work is fantastic, but you're also like an amazing painter as well. I've seen that you've done some amazing customs. Even our previous guest, James Groman, you worked on, you know, doing some of his figures, you know. But you also helped do some paint test samples for Mighty Jacks as well, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've had the good fortune of being able to work on certain custom figures that I'm personally a fan of, like James Groman. And I've also done work for Mighty Jacks, yeah, like paint samples.
Dan is a great help for us when we're touching on like the complicated stuff, like Nitro's piece, the rabbit, and he was the one who painted the paint sample. But now he rarely has time for that.
You guys got to make time for each other. You guys got to support each other. It sounds like you guys already are, though.
I blocked his phone number already.
That's okay. I blocked George's too. So, all good. So speaking of blocking, we got blocking some time for our sponsors. We got some great sponsors here at the Marsham Toy Hour. We have Prints on Wood. If you are an artist or a photographer and you'd like, just ever wanted to see your work printed on beautiful sustainable wood, well, we got just the people for you. Head on over to PrintsOnWood.com and see all the services they have to offer you. They do amazing work. You won't be disappointed. And there's 3DRetro.com for all your designer toy needs. Also, if you're in the Southern California area, they have a beautiful brick-and-mortar shop out there in Glendale, California. Check them out. And then we also have StrangeCatToys.com. Huge selection of designer vinyl toys. And if you use promo code MARSHAM at checkout, you'll receive 10% off your order. So thanks again to all of our great sponsors, and definitely be sure to check them out. All right, let's get back to it.
Were all of you collectors before you got into creating stuff?
Yep.
Yeah, I think we all are.
Yeah, definitely.
Who has the biggest collection?
Who has the biggest collection?
Jeffrey Coe.
He's probably got the biggest collection.
His collection's insane. Just, it gives me anxiety. I know toys aren't supposed to give you anxiety, but the way he just displays everything and everything, it's kind of like, you know, a lot of people put, like even George mentioned, he doesn't like to just put one or two toys on the shelf and just let that one toy be seen and displayed. Like just crams the entire shelf with hundreds of toys. I kind of feel like that's what Jeffrey Koe's collection is. You just walk into this room and there's just thousands of toys just stacked behind each other on shelves, on walls, on the ceilings. It's just, it's a lot to take in.
You could take stuff from his collection and he won't even notice.
No way. Why don't you try that and let me know how that works?
So what kind of background do you guys all have? Did you go to art school for anything, or is it just something you were interested in, so you picked it up on the side, or how did you guys get started in this?
Jackson, yeah. I studied web digital media, so I mainly work with websites and interactive media, mostly online platform stuff.
Daniel here. My educational background is actually in business, so it's got nothing to do with art. But for me, it started out with customizing action figures. So back when I was collecting, you know, like Star Wars figures and stuff like that, there were certain characters that Hasbro wasn't producing yet at that point of time. So I took it upon myself to create those characters that I wanted. And that whole customizing ethos is how I kind of started out.
Rizal, yeah? I used to work in TV and video production, and of course I had access to a lot of softwares, your Photoshops and all that, and that's where, you know, the design bug came and kind of like beat me.
Cool.
Tulika here. My background's in communications and art history, so a little bit to do with curating, I guess.
Now, Tulika, do you collect yourself? Or are you starting to get into the appreciation of the art toys and starting collecting?
Yeah, after this show, I think so. But not before this.
Hey, newcomers, very much welcome. Cool. Jackson, so Mighty Jacks produces both in vinyl and resin, and it was mentioned that vinyl is very hard to get produced in any level in Singapore. So what about your resin works? Are those any of the resin pieces produced in Singapore, or is that sent out to maybe another country?
I used to share a studio with them, and we sort of explore the resin casting and all that in Singapore. There's very, very few people, and those people who does that at a point of time were really old. They're from like maybe two generations ago or something. But they're working with really traditional, you know, war motifs and stuff. So there isn't something like this. So me and Dan just got, you know, we wanted to try it out ourselves, and it was really hard. And it was really tedious. And I don't think I could take it. So in the end, I did not pursue further, but Dan is still continuing here in Singapore.
I think there's a bit of a misconception that because Singapore is in the Far East, you know, that we are, there are a lot of factories that are accessible to us, but the reality is that Singapore is quite a cosmopolitan country. So trades like these have died out quite a while ago. So if you are looking to, the level that I self-produce is still manageable because I do small runs, but if you're looking at bigger quantities, you have to look outside of Singapore.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that. That's really interesting. So Jackson, another question for you. With the rate of growth that Mighty Jacks is seeing and all the releases and whatnot, how many employees do you have working for you now? I imagine starting out was primarily you just managing all the outsourcing of the work and seeking out artists and whatnot. But are you getting help now? Do you have in-house help and in-house artists working for you?
Actually, we started in 2012 in my bedroom, and, you know, it's just me doing all the different processes, understanding how it is. But as we grow from year to year, especially last year, which is a huge growth from us, we have 17 full-time employees now, and some are based in China to help with the production side of things. But as we grow, I realize that we are not that much of a toy company as compared to a content creation company, a studio. So most of our resources and manpower are in the design department itself, where we have seven individuals doing the design work, the concept work. And what we really want to do is to develop new universe, new worlds that we love, you know, new characters that we can play with. Toys, as we progress, toys becomes become like an outlet for us to turn them into tangible objects. But I would say that we are more of a content studio, actually.
Okay. When we were talking to Jeffrey Koh at Flaps Lab, he kind of had the same description of his company. It's like, he's not primarily based in toys, but, you know, he does a lot of creative stuff through his agency. And I've always kind of thought of Mighty Jack as primarily a toy company, but it sounds like what you're saying is you guys do toys, but you also see yourself mainly as a creative content. So you do creative designs for other properties and licenses that probably have nothing to do with toys as well, correct?
Oh, no. We don't do OEM, you know, we don't do third party, you know, jobs that other brands that require of us. What I meant is that we only make our own stuff. We only generate our own content for our own products. But I think of ourselves as a content creators. But it's only for our own products, if that makes sense.
Okay. I was hearing it as maybe you guys are also a design house as well. Like, maybe you help out with some graphic design or commercial work for other companies, you know, in addition to producing toys. That's kind of how I was interpreting it.
Oh, okay. No, I guess we are a toy company.
So I mentioned Flaps Lab. And so speaking of Flaps Lab, there's also Pobber, and then there's you guys, Mighty Jack's out there in Singapore. So being a smaller country with not a whole lot of production and toy industry out there, what's the relationship between you three companies? How does all that work? Are you guys good friends?
It's not so much of him, it's more of his toys, really, that we are friends with.
I mean, do you guys meet up for conventions, or are you guys all close friends, or what's the relationship there? Or is it competitive? Do you guys hate each other, and you just want to just...
we do meet up I think twice a month or once a month at least, and with Pobber too, Jake.
Yep.
And it's just a small community, and we just hang out, have some dinner, and talk about, you know, what are the new toys that we're gonna buy, and chasing them to give us our stuff and pre-order.
Sure.
It's not a big community here, like we mentioned before, so I think any animosity is pretty much unwanted. I mean, there's no point in having any kind of competition. I mean, friendly competition, perhaps, but at the end of the day, we're all still friends.
Are we?
Are we really?
I have that same attitude, everybody.
Yeah.
I feel like that all the time.
Me too. I like the small town feel or vibe that Singapore's got going on.
I think the main issue is that we're so small. If Singapore had a bigger industry, I'm not sure if it'd still be like this, because I've traveled to a few conventions overseas, like around the region, like Taiwan and, like you mentioned, Japan, and it seems like the communities there are very divided, because you've got people that, basically there's a lot of dirty laundry going on around there, and you hear a lot of gossip going on elsewhere, but
you hear a lot of
gossip. So, but I think it's fortunate that, you know, Singapore is so small, and by nature of its size, we tend to stick together.
I like that. I'm moving to Singapore. No, but you had mentioned conventions. Like, how often do all of, you know, any of you actually get outside of Singapore to attend? It seems like there's a bunch of conventions going on in Asia. And so how often do you guys get to go outside of Singapore to attend some of the other conventions going on?
I mean, for us, Jackson, for us, we have like a few main events that we do, like Korea. You know, it's a small emerging market, but we want to start working with artists there. And Thailand, as always, is our second best market compared to Singapore. Singapore is our first, definitely we'll do it. And US side, I think we're doing the 5 points, which is pretty new, which is the first year, I think. But it's in New York, so we want to try it out. And DCon this year, hopefully.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, well, I'll see you there at 5 points. And hope, well, George will definitely meet at DesignerCon, and I hope to see you there, too.
Gary, you're coming to DesignerCon.
I know.
An hour flight. You're asking these guys if they go all over Asia. You can't even go on an hour flight.
True. You got me. No response.
Do you have like a favorite lightning round question that you could ask Gary? I think that we got to at least do a lightning round of some sort.
Sure. Let's find one. What's your favorite Patrick Swayze movie?
Oh, that's not the one I was going to say.
In Singapore, right?
Oh, that's true. I mean, pop culture, geography fail. Okay, so
what's your favorite? What was your first designer toy?
First designer toy purchased.
Yes.
A Trexy from Play Imaginated, another Singapore company. Nice. I think it's a Huck G piece.
I'm sorry, I missed that. With Huck G?
Yeah, like a Trexy.
Oh,
like,
Trexy, you know? Trexy. I heard Huck G for some reason. So Trexy, yeah, cool.
Yeah, Huck G, Trexy.
For me, I think it was... Might have been a bootleg Michael Lau figure.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Going bootleg right out of the gate, huh?
Well, that was the only affordable thing at that time for me. So you're like... Yeah,
I get it. Designer toys are expensive. I get it.
Rizal here. I think I got the Nagora from Max Toyko.
Oh, wow. Good one. Yeah. What about you, Talika?
I think it's going to be Sket 1's Sriracha.
It's going to be. You don't even have a designer toy yet. That's awesome.
What is the toy that you created that you're most proud of?
Oh, these are hard questions.
I've only done one, so yeah.
That's an easy one then. Well, how about something like, I mean, Daniel and Jackson, probably a tougher question for you guys.
I would give like a really cliche answer in that my latest creation is my favorite.
I feel the same way.
Taking the easy way out.
It's always the new things that excites you, I think.
Okay. What is the toy in your collection that always stays out? It's like the most prominently displayed toy in your collection. What toy is it? Don't all jump in at once.
For me, it's like a 10-inch Playmobil figure. I mean, I purchased it maybe like a few years ago, but that's something that has constantly been in my display collection because, I mean, talking about the kind of designer toy path route that I took up, it was the Playmobil figure that I first started out with. I started customizing Playmobil figures. So, I mean, the Playmobil toy, it means something to me.
Cool.
How did you get a 10-inch one? I didn't even know they made 10-inch figures.
Oh, you should check it out. There's this French company that did a small run of OG Playmobil figures, I think, done in like 10-inch size. I think like maybe 2 or 3 years ago. They're movable as well, so like the head and the arms still move and all that. But it's like done in like a 10-inch scale.
Well, I'll have to look that up.
Anybody else want to tackle the toy that you like to keep displayed out? Always, always, always?
Talika, do you have any toys? Do you collect anything? What do you collect?
Can I pass?
No, I'm not letting you pass.
No, I don't collect cards. I don't.
What else do you collect?
Shot glasses.
Do you collect art? Do you collect purses? Do you collect shoes? Do you collect? I mean, what do you collect? Do you have anything?
I have some shoes. I really don't collect like one specific thing. I collect memories.
Oh,
memories. Okay, what's the memory you keep with you all the time?
I collect something really weird. So every time I go to exhibitions and every time I go to shows and I like brochures, I have like two drawers full of brochures and pamphlets and like nicely designed stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I collect.
All right.
We'll say that Carlos likes to say he collects things to put on the shelf of his heart. And your memory sounds like it's going to go on the shelf of your heart shelf.
I guess so.
All right, we're coming against the hour, so let's just wrap it up with one final question. What's the one toy that you want to get into your collection? Like, what's the toy that you've been seeking out that you're just dying to have in your collection? What's your white whale toy?
For me, I want the Jackson here. I want the para pieces that Hey Studio puts up.
Okay.
Those are beautiful.
Nice.
Daniel here. Just off the top of my head, I think what I want really badly now is the all-in set for the Mythic Legions Kickstarter. Something that I would really like in my hands now.
Okay.
Just because like I'm more of an action figure kind of collector.
I could support that answer.
Rizal here. I think I don't have any particular ones, but you know, I'm also open to free toys to fill up my collection. Yeah, anything you don't want, you can always send it over here.
I would, but that kind of makes it not a free toy because it would cost me like $40 to ship it to you. Talika, you're not getting it out of this question. What's your most sought after toy? Sket ones, Sket Ratcha?
No, that's available. I can get that. But something that I really wanted, like from this show, Kyle Kirwan did this piece called The Three Sisters. So he went to the thrift store and he got different doll heads and he put them all together. And it turned out to be this amazing, creepy, round doll thing that has no front or back, but it stands on 2 feet. And it's basically like a 360-degree view of various doll heads. That's what I wanted, but it got sold out on opening night. So I don't know if he's going to make more of these, but yeah, that's something I would really buy.
Please don't. That thing gives me nightmares. For anyone who doesn't know what it is, it's the main toy image on our promotional image this week. It's
exactly.
It's fantastic, but it'll keep me awake at night too.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, I mean, thanks for inviting us to chat with y'all. I think it's been a lot of fun, and I certainly learned a lot of new things. Why don't we just do a quick round of let everyone know, like if we didn't already previously say it, like let our listeners know where maybe they can find you on social media or anything, any releases or anything that you might have coming out that they can seek out. So, Jackson, why don't you go first?
Oh, you can check us out on Mighty Jacks, Instagram, Facebook, and MightyJacks.com. Weekly new releases.
Okay.
Dan here, you can find my work at thedanielyu.com, thedanielyu.com, and I'm on social media under the same handle as well.
Very cool.
Rizal here. I'm at Fragile Darkness on Instagram. Lots of stuff, lots of micro runs coming out in the whole year. A lot of collaborations and all that, so keep a lookout.
You can find Cult on Cult Magazine on Instagram, Facebook Cult 3D. And I think what might interest you guys is we have a latest issue called Toys Magazine issue. And this is the first time that we've done a Toys Magazine issue along with the gallery show of the same theme.
Yeah, definitely. You guys forward me a PDF of the Cult Magazine issue with the toys. It looks fantastic. Great imagery. I love the subject matter. I would highly suggest picking it up. And also, congrats on the Choking Hazard exhibition in conjunction with the Cult Magazine. Everything looks great. Very well done. I commend you. Excellent work. George, why don't you let people know where they can find you?
George Gaspar on Facebook. That links to a lot of things, I guess. One day I'll get that all straightened out. And
what about Double G Toys?
I don't have anything going yet. Double G Toys on Instagram, but I, you know, it's all right. One day I'll get that going.
All right. Well, I'm Gary Ham. You can find me at Gary Ham on Instagram or my website, superham.com. Thanks again, everyone. It was great talking to you. Jackson, hope to meet you at 5 points if you make it out. And this has been the Marsham Toy Hour. We'll be back next week, not because we have to, but because we want to. Until our next transmission, we're signing off. Bye.
Thanks for having us, guys.